Hey everybody, listeners out there, I want to introduce you to our next session of Compliance and Cocktails. Here with us today, we have Steve Levine and Alan Dobbins. I'll let Steve introduce him in a moment. Again, I'm Richard Hudson, and today we're going to be talking topics related to compliance in the automotive space. So, what are you drinking today, Alan?
I'm drinking TX whiskey on the rocks.
TX whiskey. Steve?
TX whiskey is a state thing. You need to come to the
Yeah.
state of Texas to get
Yeah.
I am dry today. It's working hours, so I'm just having a virgin iced tea. Nothing fancy.
And you know my preference is the white rum and a Diet Coke. So I'll let Steve go ahead and take over here. Go ahead, Steve.
So we have a great honor today. Alan Dobbins has one of the finest legal minds that I've ever run across in this industry. And that's saying something because Alan's not a lawyer. He practices what he calls internet law. If you find it on Google, then he's going to give an opinion on it. So the background is Alan, I was thinking a couple of weeks ago that this is our 10-year anniversary of knowing each other. We actually met at the Hudson Cook Conference 10 years ago, which Alan, I think, was the only non-lawyer at the conference. And he was pestering all the lawyers, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And everybody's looking at him like, who are you? But so then I went to work for Alan at AutoStar, and that's how I met Richard. So, Alan, welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Well, thank you. I can't wait to get into this. You guys are doing a lot of great work in the community, and I am a huge supporter, as you know, because education is probably the number one thing that we should be working on as not only dealerships, but just people in general. Education is probably one of the single largest things that we should focus on as business executives, entrepreneurs, and people who just generally care about making themselves better each and every day.
So for those of you that don't know, Alan was the visionary behind the AutoStar Innovate Conference, which used to take place every year. And I remember sitting in Alan's office. I wasn't working for him too long. And he said, what do you think if we have a compliance track at the conference? And I'm like, yeah, sure, we can have a couple of classes. And he goes, no, I mean a full compliance track, compliance classes. Six, eight, 10 classes, and people come just for the compliance. And for those of you that have been to our Compliance Unleashed conference, that is kind of the continuation of Alan's vision for compliance track. So thank you for that, Alan, because that has proven to be one of the funnest and most rewarding things that we do with Ignite.
Well, it was unique, and you know what? We were, as far as I know, the very first one in the industry to offer a 100% compliance track. People were mixing in compliance at that time in the conversations, but it wasn't a focus, a 100% focus. And my last year, we I think ran nine tracks, and you managed the entire compliance track, and it went 2.5 days, and it was probably, I think, one of the most rewarding things that our customers got out of it. I talked to somebody the other day, and they said that they think that they don't really like compliance and actually having an emphasis on compliance. And it's actually a dealer, and I'm not going to name this person, but because they felt like that it promoted fear. And this person has a podcast as well, and they felt like that 100% of the compliance work that's being done out there is all being built around fear. And I don't know that, fear is really the right word. I do think that acknowledgement and education is something that you should work towards to avoid fear. You're only fearful if you're not doing things that you should be doing. Otherwise, why should you be afraid? You should be cautious, you should be educated, and you should work towards excellence. No one's ever going to know 100% of the answers to the questions. And if you do, then that's a problem because I don't know anybody that knows 100% of the answers. You hire people that are excellent at what they do. You hire companies like Ignite Consulting to educate you on the things that you need to be successful. And you hire the right lawyers. And, you know, Steve, one of the things you taught me when you came to work at AutoStar was that, you know, Alan, we can't in-house, having in-house counsel doesn't mean that you do all of your legal work internally. I think I thought, you know, when you hire in-house counsel, I'm going to hire this great compliance attorney and he's going to do 100% of the work internally. And, you know, although we did a huge amount of work internally and built a lot of great tools and improved our software and helped our customers and those things, what I found out was sometimes it's appropriate to hire the best lawyer for the best situation. And, you know, I think that was probably one of the best lessons and one of the greatest things that I learned from you at AutoStar.
Well, let me ask you this. And thank you, by the way. But let me ask you, because you were ahead of the curve. You hired me at AutoStar. I don't know that anybody else that we were competing with in our wheelhouse had in-house counsel. But you saw a real need. And I think that a lot of third-party providers kind of have this, it's a fear, just like you were saying. I think that they have a fear of it, but I think it could really help the overall product development, and I wish more people would be open-minded and embrace that. You know, that being said, let me ask you this. You've been out of the DMS business for a couple of years. You've been doing some other things, but what's your impression of where the industry has been the last 5 years and where it's going?
Boy, that's a great question. I would say that over the last 5 years, we've seen a lot of changes, and I'd say six specifically since I actually left AutoStar. Actually, it's a little over six now. And but I think one of the most interesting things is digital, you know, retailing of vehicles was actually popular back in the day, but it was being done, you know, first it was just e-sign. We were just actually working on e-sign, and then a lot of the lenders were bringing some of their documents and contracts online for e-sign. And, you know, I know when I bought a car just, you know, probably 7 or 8 years back, they had me e-sign my contract. But that was the only document that was electronically signed at the time. And I did that in the dealership with a pen and, you know, one of the electronic pencil tools on the guy's desk. But that was really the only document I electronically signed. And that was unique because there weren't many people doing that at that time. And that particular lender decided to support that. But I think as we've gone on, dealers and lenders, especially lenders, have started to become much more accepting of this. And a lot of it, I think, has been forced upon them. And I think a lot of the states have actually changed their laws. I know the state of Texas has changed rules regarding title transfers and such, to accommodate the fact that with COVID, you know, dealers and consumers couldn't always get to the right location to actually transfer their titles. So even the states have actually reacted and become much more aware of the fact that, you know, doing business remotely is important. And as a result of that, you know, dealers are looking for ways to do things remotely. I know that there are former AutoStar customers and lots of other dealers out there that are starting to take on this online initiative of selling vehicles remotely. And, you know, what the interesting part about that is, I mean, if we take Carvana as an example, obviously they have a whole initiative of selling cars remotely, and they deliver the vehicle to your house and those things. And I've actually watched a lot of their videos of their testimonials from their customers, because I've been really curious about, you know, what the customer's viewpoint of that has been. And, you know, it's interesting. They have advocates for it, and they have people that also are, I would say by and large, they're almost all advocates. I would say probably 95% of the people's videos I watched were advocates of the situation. And to their credit, and to anybody who does business online, this is something that they need to be aware of, is they need to take ownership of whatever actions or whatever inactions happen as a result of that experience. It definitely starts at the top. And, you know, I know I was giving those other folks as an example. And I can tell you that companies like that take those things seriously, and they should take those things seriously. Your average independent dealer, you know, probably doesn't always consider, I would say, the overall impact of some of the decisions that are made within the dealership with regard to compliance. A lot of times they depend on their vendors for those things, and that dependence can be, one step away from absolute catastrophic failure. I know from the software development world, as an example, I think there's an initiative these days, and I think this is obviously important as well, that you actually take compliance seriously in the development process. People are actually hiring developers now that their job is security, for instance, and compliance. Security is obviously one of the things that's a big hot button of Consumer Finance Protection Bureau and other consumer advocacy groups. And if the software providers that are out there today and the dealers themselves aren't taking security seriously, then that could end up being a big issue. And if you're a larger company, a large finance company, or a large dealership, or frankly, anybody in the software business, and you don't think security is important, you better rethink the situation, because security is, it's first of all, if you can hack the federal government, it's one of the most difficult things to do, because they spend more money probably than anybody on this process, in this process. But for you to, for you to be really successful and to be really good at what you do, again, I'm going to get back to this, and to have longevity, you've got to take compliance and seriously. And it's not just, compliance of, oh, my forms are correct, or, oh, this is other things correct, or we're filling out this piece of paper correct. It goes well beyond that. If we get into delivering vehicles digitally, the entire vehicle digitally, I mean, literally hands off, drop the vehicle at the door digitally, then, that opens up a lot of issues. And, are the disclosures being made correctly? So companies like SecureClose, for instance, where they've got an automated process for disclosing all the details of the transaction, those are really important. And, making sure that that information is delivered consistently is obviously of huge importance. Well, a lot of that is you guys were involved in this, and you guys have been involved in actually writing, helping write scripts and understanding the terms and the things that people say in the closing process, and obviously advertising and all that. People expect a tremendous online experience today when they go to buy a car. Well, a lot of that also involves compliance. And it's unfortunate that we can't always offer the best online experience when people have to actually acknowledge that they understand certain terms and conditions that they're agreeing to. But unfortunately, it's the world we live in. The reality is we have to have a quality system that's been audited and is controlled. And the information that's being provided is accurate to the best of our abilities, and that we've had some third-party vetting.
I mean, do you see a disconnect between a lot of the vendors, especially some of the new vendors, jumping into the online digital space that are really good at the digital online presence thing and marketing, but not really good at the compliance piece, like they leave that off? And a good example is, I've got a website. Someone who hosts it, they build it, everything looks great, but I take a look at it, and they're missing like 18 things that they need if they're going to be in the consumer finance space. I mean, do you see a big disconnect, especially with some of the newer players?
Well, let me give you an example. So back at the height of the COVID virus, a lot of dealers went to what they called online sales. And there were some third-party providers out there that said, hey, we're going to be able to give you e-contracting, and you're going to be able to do these deals. They're not going to have to step foot in the dealership, et cetera, et cetera. What they were really doing is electronic signatures. There's a big difference between electronic signatures and electronic contracting, and thus you had companies that they thought they originated these deals, but when they went to go sell those deals, nobody would buy them because they weren't true electronic contracts. They didn't have a vaulting process. They didn't have all these steps that you have to go through to be a true electronic contract. And you could say the same thing about advertising. You could say the same thing about the credit application process. Different stops along the way have that challenge. So, you know, one of the things that we always teach our clients is don't take anything that the vendor is telling you for granted. You have to vet it. Yeah, I was on the phone with a client today, and they said to me, well, the third party said this. I said, okay, well, give them my information. I want a call from their lawyer, and I want to see the opinion on that. You just can't take their word for it.
So can you give me a little more specific information on a scenario like that where you've seen that to be a big issue? I mean, I know obviously the electronic original is a big issue, and vaulting is an issue, and being able to transfer that between lenders, if you sell that our dealer to lender, lender to lender, is a big issue, because determining what the electronic original is means that there's got to be some level of security digitized that's within that to determine whether or not that is a true original, whether it be through blockchain or other functionality. So can you give me a specific, or maybe separate electronic signing, e-signing, and what you just said, because delivering vehicles electronically and electronic signature use, you know, people thought they were saying they were one and the same, and they're really not. Both of us know that. So what do you mean? Maybe separate the two and explain that a little greater.
Well, I don't know that we need to get into the intricacies between e-signature and electronic contracting on this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole separate podcast.
Yes.
But the point is, and I'll give you another example, where you have these companies going out and they're talking about pre-screening and they're talking about soft pulls versus hard pulls, and they're making statements. And I think the dealers, the industry as a whole takes those statements and kind of blurs the lines and puts it all together, where actually those are very distinct legal process. And you have to know what the third party means and what they're really saying. Because I've seen some folks have websites designed, you know, they thought they were streamlining the credit application process. And it's a great process, except for the fact that it's not compliant. You know, so I would argue they have nothing.
Well, and I think the digital retailing space, which obviously we spend a lot of time talking about, is going to be one of the fastest growing spaces. And I think the reason it is because it's like the whole work at home initiative. Depending on what your customers' jobs are. Obviously, if they're laborers and working in the field, then obviously they're not going to work from home. But I read an interesting statistic the other day that said that, you know, 60% of today's workforce, if they're not offered a remote work solution, they will not take a job. And people are starting to become much more aggressive about what they want out of their lives. And what's interesting is that working remotely, I have a lot of friends that do that. And they actually work more hours than they did when they were in the office. I think it's because there's no commuting. They don't get sick as often. They tend to find time to go in and catch up on some things that they may not. There's no distractions from people walking by their office. So the whole working remotely and being more productive, I think, is going to be, you know, it's going to be the thing of the future. And it's going to become almost de facto.
So Alan, I'll give you an example. You would love working with remote Steve, because back when I was working for you, Alan had no boundaries. Yeah, the phone could ring at 10 o'clock at night. The phone could ring on the way. It didn't matter. There were no boundaries. And sometimes I would have to shut you down. I'm like, man, Alan, I go to sleep around now, so I'll see you in the morning. Well, when the virus hit and, you know, we worked remotely for a good 4 or 5 months, and I lost like all separation and boundary to where I've got an efficient home office now, and I've got an efficient office at the office. And I just kind of jump back and forth. And I think nothing about driving home for 30 minutes and getting back on the computer and seeing if any emails came in, and then eating dinner and getting back on the computer again. So you would love the new version of me.
I absolutely would love that. I would love that I could call you anytime. You know what, though? What's interesting is I've gone the other way. I used to want to call people at all the time of the night. Now I actually try to think about that before I do it. Maybe it's because now I'm 100% remote, and I don't necessarily want people calling me at 11 o'clock at night. So, you know, maybe I've become much more aware, but you're right. It's just part of our lives today, and it will be. And, you know,
let's admit it. We're all about 12 years older and a little more mature and settled than we were back in the day. Huh?
Yeah. Speak for yourself. I'm still not very mature.
This is one of the reasons I thought you were such a great leader. It's not that you embrace compliance, not that you were a compliance guy, but you really cared about your clients and you cared about getting it right. So I remember this one time, client was being audited by a state regulator and they were reading the statute one way and you were reading the statute another way. And you call me in your office and like, hey, we're going to get on the phone with them and we're going to get this settled once and for all. And, you know, me being the lawyer, I foolishly thought I was going to be doing all the talking. I don't know that I got a word in edgewise. And Alan kept them on the phone for like, I don't know, 2-3 hours, just dissecting the statute, dissecting the examination until basically he got the regulator to agree with him and explained, this is the way we built our software. This is why it was built that way. This is what the statute says. And I really admired that because a lot of folks, number one, they don't want to work that hard. And they don't care that much. And you know, you really taught me you got to care about your clients. You got to care about, you know, every one of them. But the one in the story I just told was not your biggest client. But you cared about everyone just the same. And that's one of the things you taught me that I will always remember.
If I remember, well, thank you. That is so nice of you to say. You know, it's very nice, actually. You know, it is important. And at the end of the day, that situation was really interesting because I can remember it. It was about early payoffs, and it was about large payments, not early payoffs. It was about large payments throughout the contract. And if you remember, we had also Nikki was on the phone, Hudson Cook, and you were on the phone, and I think y'all were just trying to make sure I stayed on the rails and I didn't say something completely stupid.
So Alan was paying, I don't know how many $100 an hour for us to shut up and stay out of his way.
Well, I don't know that I was trying to get you to stay out of my way as much as I was hoping you would interrupt me if I said something really stupid. So, if I remember in that conversation, we had we had probably 5 or 6 people from the Texas Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's office on the phone at that time. And, you know, logistically, the conversation was really interesting because it was centered around sales tax and interest allocations. And essentially, if you remember one of the comments that I made was, you know, if you guys want the principal balance reduced ahead of the sales tax, then maybe you need to contact the sales tax commissioner's office and ask the comptroller if they're willing to take less sales tax. Because, you know, if they make a large payment at some point in time, sales tax has to be paid. The tax is already deferred up front, if you remember, on the down payment, essentially, because he's having to advance it, the dealer is, and may never see it again. So at some point, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to let the dealer get any of his money, any opportunity to pay the sales tax to the state and recover that cost? Or is he going to have to pay principal adjustments and take those and reduce his loan balances and never actually see the money that he needs to pay to the sales tax actually received? So,
I want to point something out here to the audience. I don't care what third party provider you're talking about, what technology you're talking about. If you can't have a conversation like that with that level of detail with your provider, then you really have to question why you're doing business with them. Yeah, I don't care whether it's advertising, websites, GPS devices, you know, whatever it is, you have to have people in that company that could really go granular like that, because that's what you're buying. And I think too many people, they get taken to dinner, they get wowed by the bells and whistles, and they don't ask those hard questions and ask for that level of detail. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox.
No, I think that's great. And you know what? If you remember, Steve, the one comment you used to always make to me was, Alan, you need to start every conversation with, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not giving you legal advice. So that was something also I had to learn, which was, I don't know that any vendor, that's probably one of the cautionary things about that is that, you know, vendors have a hard time answering these questions because either they don't know, which I think happens a lot, or they are unwilling to share the information because of fear and, retribution. We were providing tools that made decisions, in essence, for the dealership on how to manage various things within the dealership. And most of the time it was a direct action. So it wasn't advertising where it has an indirect impact. It was a direct action. So originating contracts, collecting payments, allocating transactions or money on across various types of balances. And, people could argue whether or not, should we do CPI first or should we do our payment first or whatever. So those kinds of conversations were things that we had on a regular basis. And we tried to have those conversations with our dealerships. And I think a lot of vendors out there are unwilling to try to share that information and more hide behind the fact that that's an independent decision of the dealer rather than taking on the role of advisor. That doesn't mean taking on the role of attorney, taking on the role of advisor and expert within that industry. And so they need people like, Ignite to step in and help them and get the information that they need because the vendors simply aren't willing to always share that information. And frankly, I'm not sure they always know the information.
No, you're exactly right. And I wish more people had your attitude. I've always said you're a voracious learner. And I think that really serves you well.
Well, thank you. I don't always take the right approach. I can tell you that, but I do tend to pull things apart and try to dig into them. And I honestly think if you're providing a product or a service to anyone and it has a legal component associated with it, you have the responsibility, fiduciary, whatever you want to call it, responsibility, or just a protective responsibility towards trying to provide the right information at the right time and do your best to be ahead of the problem before it becomes a problem. So many people are reactionary to things and they want to act like it's not an issue. And maybe sometimes that's due to funding. They don't want to spend a certain portion of their budget on these kinds of things as a vendor because maybe they think it's not as important or it's the dealer's problem or lender's problem. It's somebody else's problem other than mine. And what they don't realize is that, it's everybody's problem.
No, and that's very true.
And if you don't have customers that are in business, then they're not your customers. But second of all, they're not paying taxes, right? They're not doing things to support our economy. And so it's a much larger impact than just any one thing.
So let me ask you this, just switching gears a little bit. You've observed the industry for several years without a vested interest, so to speak. What fascinates you? What's gone on that fascinates you? What do you get motivated? You go to a conference, you look around. How do you see things now?
Oh, my gosh. You know, what's interesting is obviously we came from the DMS space and more than that, loan servicing and all that. What fascinates me is how little it's progressed. I'm shocked, actually shocked at the technological process progress that's been made because it essentially hasn't been made. And the products that are out there these days that are being created, although they, a lot of them are very pretty and nice to look at, they don't always offer the depth that may be necessary. And you know what? At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Some people want to place everything on beauty and they want to look at it like, oh, it's got to be web-based and it's got to do this and that. But the reality is, does the tool that you're buying solve the problem that you have? Is there consistency? Am I getting the information that I need to be an expert at what I do, whether it be providing sophisticated reporting or accounting? Is it supporting my needs with regard to compliance, which obviously we're talking about today? So there's all these factors. And what's interesting is that a lot of the people that are entering this business that are new may understand the technology, but not the details associated with it. So even though there are some interesting new products that are being released, there's still not a huge emphasis on detail. And, you know, I'll talk about software two ways. So, you know, people talk about enterprise software versus small business software. So in the enterprise world, you know, that is completely different in one context of talking about companies versus auto dealerships and finance companies, because enterprise is, you know, hundreds of thousands of employees and this and that. In the other world, in the used car space, it's a much smaller number, but you could call it still enterprise because within that space, it's still large. If you have hundreds of employees, that would be a large company in the independent dealer space. And I don't think people should, you know, expect every small business solution to act as an enterprise solution. And I don't think everybody should expect an enterprise solution to support, you know, all the exact needs of a small business. So there needs to be some sort of happy medium where you have a solution that's affordable for the dealer and at the same time offers the key things that they need and does it well, consistently, day in and day out. It doesn't need to be too much. It doesn't need to be too little. You know, there's companies out there that are producing very sophisticated CRMs, for instance. Well, you know, your average dealership, independent dealership, doesn't need a super sophisticated CRM to do business in the independent space. It's not as important. It is important. I don't mean sales and follow-up and all those things aren't important. I don't mean that lead management's not important. I don't mean that having a business development center is not important. All that's important, but how deep that product is may not be as important in the independent space as it is in the franchise space. So I think the most important thing, and Richard and I have spoken about this before, is, you know, buy the right tool for what you need based on the kind of company you are. You know, so really do your due diligence on the tools that you buy. And, you know, I know Ignite offers some services. And this is not a promotion for Ignite, but I know you offer some services on analyzing DMS products and determining which ones are the right ones for the business based on your situation, your size, your volume, your needs, and not one size fits all. So what's really interesting is I think that technologically there's been some advances. Yes, there's been some improvements in the products technologically, but I think by and large the industry has not changed that much. And I'm a little surprised by that. You know, at the end of the day, why isn't there? Why isn't there a product that fulfills the needs of the large customer 100% and the small customer 100%? You know, why isn't there products that actually meet those needs that take into account things like compliance? I think it's because compliance, you know, number one, is expensive. And I don't mean expensive economically necessarily. I mean expensive in time. It takes a lot of time to be really good in compliance. And so the vendors themselves have to place some level of importance on it. It has to be of utmost importance because you're talking about the economic survival of your company and the economic survival of your customer. And so either you treat that with importance and you care about that, or you don't. And if you don't, then that will ultimately come back to haunt you, because entities like the CFPB are going to make sure that's important, and you'll be a casualty as a result if you don't think it's important. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I've often said, and I talk about this, and you guys have heard me say this before, I talk about online activities being a lot like online dating, right? And so online dating is obviously a huge business. And it's a huge business for a lot of reasons. I think that one of the reasons digital retailing and buying cars online is becoming so much more popular is not only do people want the experience of having a tremendous opportunity to do business online, but I mean, Amazon has proven that. I went in the store the other day to buy something at a particular store, and almost everything is off the shelves, and I could go buy it on Amazon and have it in my house tomorrow. So having the experience of buying things online is something that, as consumers, we're just, brick and mortar is not going to be quite as important in the future. Now, with cars, there's a lot of people that like to touch them and feel them and understand them. And then there's other people that just want transportation. So the online experience, though, is a lot, and getting back to the whole dating thing, is one of the reasons that online dating, I believe, is so popular is because, one, it's convenience. It gives you an opportunity to, you know, meet people and interact with people that you may never have an opportunity to do that with again. And if we were to compare that to cars, it gives me an opportunity to shop a lot of different vehicles and a lot of dealerships and get a feel for what I think about those dealerships and their websites and how they interact with me, because it gives me a feeling about what they think of me as a customer. A great experience means that I feel like I'm going to have a great experience when I buy a car from that company. Another reason is fear. One of the most terrifying things for most people is to buy a car. It's one of the most expensive things you'll ever do. It's also one of the most, there's a huge depreciation factor associated with it. So you're not going to make money doing it, typically. It's more of a means to an end. And, you know, people are afraid of being taken advantage of. And so if we were to compare that again to online dating, people are afraid of the meeting new people and being rejected. You know, that's the reason a lot of guys don't ask pretty girls to go have a dance or, you know, go on a date or whatever. Fear is anxiety. And most people, for most people, anxiety is really debilitating. And it's something that's really hard to get through. And so making the car purchase a simple, easy experience where that fear does not create a flight mode or self-defense mechanism is something that I think every dealership should strive for in their online experience. You know, if you were going to examine the different types of purchases that you might make, I would probably say that buying a car online is probably I would say buying a car in general is probably the scariest thing anybody will ever do, because most people aren't educated and most people automatically believe that the dealership themselves are all out for themselves. It's all about them. It's not about what their experience is and what they enjoy. It's about being taken advantage of. And so I think one of the things that the website providers out there really need to work hard at is trying to create an experience that's rewarding and that's not centered around the concept of gimme, gimme, gimme. Now, this doesn't mean you don't need information to be able to execute the transaction. That doesn't mean you don't need accurate information to perform a trade appraisal. That doesn't mean you don't need quality information from them to determine underwriting and background checks and those things, because you still have a responsibility legally to determine that they are who they say they are, as we all know, and through verification functions. And it's not always just through the credit bureau and all that. There is still another responsibility associated with that. So, you know, we do the same thing though in online dating. Nobody wants to date a, you know, serial killer. So, you know, you still have some sort of vetting process that you might go through there. So they're very similar. And people interact with the computer now in a way that is virtually anonymous, creates a sense of anonymity. And I think people like that. And so finding a way to tap into that and to create an experience to buy a car that's both compliant, and I think that's the big word. How do you make it compliant? And satisfying at the same time. That's the greatest challenge. And secure close is one example. You obviously are a huge example of that, because that entire experience has got to be reviewed, monitored. And as the rules and laws change, and they will change, and sometimes people think that contracts change because the state made a change to the contract. Contracts change a lot of times simply due to court decisions, judicial decisions.
Or even you remember the regulator in Missouri that read a law that had been in place for a decade, and all of a sudden they issued a different interpretation of how I think payments should be applied.
Yep.
Remember that?
I do remember that.
So, and nothing had changed. No court, there was no court, no case law. There was no change in the law. We just had the state came and said, yeah, we were looking at it this way before, but now we're looking at it differently. So
I do remember that. And you know what? This is where people like you come in, because, you know, you're keeping up with these things and you're monitoring these things because you're, you know, knee deep in it every day. And, you know, I think that, I think it's a tremendous opportunity for people out there to take advantage of this new medium, or this medium that's available. It's not new, but it's new if you wanted to take it from beginning to end, 100% start to finish online. That would say that's new. And but they need companies like yours to help them get through those waters, because let me tell you, if they make a mistake and the disclosures aren't made correctly and the things aren't done properly, then they're setting themselves up for a big issue down the line. Well, yeah, I'm going to get back to what I was saying a second ago. I think providing the experience of buying a vehicle from beginning to end online is going to be huge. And that's going to be a large development effort. And, you know, having access to a larger amount of inventory is going to be another one. So I can see things like where dealerships actually create partnerships, in essence, where they become part of a community. And they may even go through some sort of digital exchange and share vehicles, so to speak, especially when vehicles are outside a geographic area. So I could see lots of things happening as it relates to taking all kinds of access to inventory and access to acquisition of inventory and giving the consumer access to more inventory. But more importantly, once you actually sell the car, how's it being delivered? You know, the guy that's showing up on site to deliver the car that's taking it off the wrecker, you know, what is he saying to that customer? When the tires have mud all over them and they offload it off the truck and it's not clean, it's not pristine, it's not the way the customer expected it, what are they doing about it? You know, are they washing off the tires? Are they doing things? What are they saying to the customer? Here's what it is. It is what it is. Have a nice day. Sign this contract here. Are they making them sign on the field? Is the guy that's delivering it knowledgeable enough to actually being able to educate the customer, to take them through the contract signing process? I would say the answer to that question is going to be no, more than likely. So how can we create a digital experience where the customer acquires or gets his vehicle and takes them through the process of doing it from beginning to end legally and efficiently? And then how do we react afterwards? When the customer is not getting what he or she expected, okay, what are we doing? Are we unwinding the deal? Do we give them any kind of rescission period? Is that something we should do? Well, I would say, as a point of confidence in the company, I would say that that would be a great thing to do. Now, well, whether that's legal or not.
You brought up something really important. Because my impression is Carvana and CarMax and some of the other big industry leaders, you know, that they led the way with this 7-day return for any reason campaign. And now right. I see that even smaller dealers in remote areas that don't have that direct competition because it's not a Carvana within hundreds of miles. That's the expectation that the consumer has now, because that's what they read about. That's what they see online. So that's what people are having to do. And I think that's an example of something that's really, it's become a better experience for the consumer.
Yeah. And, you know, that means you got to put things in place that not only can you, you know, maybe it's 3 days, maybe it's 4 days, maybe it's not seven, but at the end of the day, what do you do about their trade-in? Are you willing to hold their trade-in for the amount of time during that rescission period? Is there a legal issue associated with it? I have no idea. I was curious. You know, I'd love to get into this with you.
It's a state law question as to what the obligations are, what a conditional delivery or a spot delivery is. I mean, there's lots of things to consider at the state level with that. That's a great example.
Do bailment agreements come into play?
You better believe it. I told mine earlier. My favorite Alan story is just that kind of leadership and that kind of passion and always just being a voracious learner and grabbing it and not letting it go till he extracted every little bit out of it. And that's just taught me a lot.
Well, thank you so much for both of you. Honestly, it's so nice. But, you know, sometimes that causes paralysis by analysis. Or analysis by paralysis, or what are those? I can't ever remember which way you're supposed to say it. But sometimes digging in is a good thing, and sometimes it can be a bad thing. But you know, it's I think the overarching thing that I got out of today, and is that all right? And as I think about it, as a recap on the end here, is that I think one of the greatest challenges that you guys have is finding ways to transfer the passion that you have to your customers and to your prospects. Because I think if people understood what they're dealing with and what the possibilities are for success and failure, I mean, this can actually be a positive thing. You know, a lot of people, we talked about fear earlier, a lot of people want to think compliance is fear. Well, why not make compliance positive? I agree. Fear is usually a good motivator. I hate to say that because people react to sort of according to fear. But you know what is even better than that is when you have a bad experience, what are you going to do to turn it around? What are you going to do to put somebody a smile on their face? When that car showed up and it had mud all over it, it wasn't exactly. Did you send them a $100 gift card or something like that to go get their car detailed? What did you do? What did you do when you reacted to that? How did you make that a positive experience for them? There are ways to make bad experiences positive. And sometimes that means you got to, you know, own up to your mistakes and you got to figure out what you did and how you avoid it in the future. You know, I'll say one quick thing and we'll wrap this up is, you know, when I used to go do installs, and you guys know that I used to do installations even when we had 100 employees. And I did that anonymously. You know that I had separate business cards that actually called myself implementation specialist, kind of like undercover boss. I did that because I wanted to understand what our customers thought about us as a company. And I also wanted to understand the processes that how our processes were impacting those customers. And, you know, how many owners do that? You know, I think if a lot of the owners in these dealerships took on the roles that their employees take on and understood what they're dealing with, they would do a better job of leading their companies and understanding the impact of the things that they do and how they impact not only their own employees, but their customers. And I think if, you know, most owners being entrepreneurs, they want to make things better and they want to make money and they want to, you know, improve. And one of the best ways to do that is to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. And, you know, most of the time if people are upset, there's a reason they're upset. You know, sometimes people are upset simply because they're bad actors and they didn't do what they're supposed to do, and you're actually holding them accountable. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the ones that aren't, and that there's ways to mitigate. Because a lot of times, you know, giving somebody a $100 gift card will save you thousands later. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, sometimes it's just the very small things. It's not always economic. It's sometimes just some, you know,
gesture,
some semblance of gesture and say thank you. Thank you for being our customer. Thank you for doing this or that. It's all about appreciation. Now, there's going to be a group of people out there that are going to make us angry and never do what we want, you know, and never going to treat us with respect. But that doesn't mean we need to do that.
Agreed. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this session of Cocktails and Compliance. I would like to thank Alan Dobbins for being here today and just kind of giving us a lay of the land, where he's at and what he sees in the industry, in the future of the industry. Steve, thank you as well for being here. If anyone has any questions about the podcast or any questions for Alan or Ignite, please feel free to email us at info@ignitecp.com. That's ignitecharliepaul.com. info@ignitecp.com. We'll be happy to respond to any questions that you may have. And again, thanks everyone for joining us, and have a great day.